Hi all, Lily here. We've talked about how much we love Needed, but one product I really leaned on, especially through my VBAC pregnancy, was their prenatal collagen. I love how simple and clean it is. It's pure hydrolyzed bovine collagen, nothing extra, with a totally neutral flavor that mixes seamlessly into drinks or food. Collagen is especially important because our natural production starts slowing in our early 20s, and pregnancy, stress, and postpartum recovery only increase those needs. It's rich in amino acids like glycine and proline, which are key building blocks for collagen production in the body. It was such an easy, supportive addition for me during my pregnancy and recovery, and it's another reason why we trust Needed so much. You can get 20% off with code TVL at checkout. Head to thisisneeded.com today, and you can even stack it on top of their new subscription discount as well. So that's thisisneeded.com with code TVL for 20% off. Hello, women of strength. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. My name is Lily. I am one of your hosts, and I am joined today with Paige, my amazing co-host. Hi, Paige.
Hi, Lil.
We have Allison on the podcast today. You guys, she is awesome. Her birth story is amazing and empowering and full of decision-making that I think is wonderful to hear, and advocacy in a scenario that wasn't necessarily ideal. And she is also a pelvic floor physical therapist. So if you've ever been curious about pelvic floor PT, this is a really great episode to tune into. So we're super excited. Before we dive into a review of the week, Paige, what's on your mind? Have you been at any births recently? Do you have any birthy insights to share with the world?
I did have a birth like a week ago, which was great, wonderful. But lately, what's been on my mind are some of these sticky phrases that people say that just are like limiting beliefs and make me cringe. And I almost think we should do an episode one day about like all of the phrases that make us cringe. I don't know. That could get a little spicy. But this is just a gentle reminder, as you are scrolling on social media, as your algorithm changes to birthy things, just leave room for the nuance, leave room for your individual story, and be careful out there. Yeah, that's all I have to say.
I love that. I think that's sage advice for anyone in any season, right? Like the internet can just be such a icky place and filled with really strong opinions in one direction or the other. I was at a VBAC recently, 2 weeks ago. And so my little birthy insight for you is to find a provider that is patient. I was with this VBAC mama, and she was with this group of OBs that, frankly, I was really nervous about. I'd never had a delivery with them, but I've heard like, oh, they're like younger OBs. They're like pretty by the book. They're not, you know, the most open to VBAC. They're pretty tolerant. My client had some kind of weird experiences in the office with them. And so I went in kind of like with my fists tight, ready to like fight. And one of the OBs was definitely a little more whatever. But my client ended up having a baby with a lot of D cells to the point where she was pushing, and she'd be on one side pushing. She'd push, the contraction would end, baby would dip. We had to flip her to the other side. And her whole pushing, we were flip-flopping every single contraction. And at one point I put my hands on her provider and I said, thank you so much for your level of patience. And she looked back at me and she said, this is not how it always is, but this is how it should be. And I cried because wow, that matters. I think that she got her VBAC because she had a provider that was willing to say like, great, let's move. Let's change it up. Let's do everything in our power to avoid the C-section. And she did. And it was great. So, and that's my feedback, is be patient.
I cannot wait to have this client on the podcast because there's so much more that I want to know about how this whole birth went. Oh, like even just a little piece, I'm like, give us more.
I know. I was supposed to do her postpartum visit today, and poor thing, they are sick. So, which I think is a theme of her birth. So I got to beg her to come on because I just would love her story to be on, because I think It would be a good one. So, all right. Well, speaking of birth stories, we have one on deck for you, Women of Strength. Paige has a review of the week, and then we will be back with Allison.
I do. We need more recent reviews. So head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, because we are lacking in current ones. But this one isn't that old. It's on Apple Podcast from Chris Kate, and it's a good one. It says, this podcast is life-changing. I had an extremely traumatic birth center hospital transfer that then emergency C-section over the course of 5 days. I went on to plan a VBAC for my second, prepared to the best of my ability with the information I had. With an unsupportive provider, I had yet another C-section. Now planning a third, I came across this podcast and have never felt so validated. My birth trauma was too painful for me to relive. I had accepted the reality of never experiencing the birth I craved and felt I needed in my soul. It was all too traumatic for me, so I locked it in a closet, never dreaming to open that door. This podcast has gradually allowed me to not only open that door, but to slowly sort through all the heavy baggage. I could not be more grateful. I'm healing in a way I never knew possible thanks to this amazing podcast. I can confidently say now I know I can have a VBA 2C. I am now in the process of interviewing midwives for an HBA 2C. Please never stop doing what you're doing. I can only speak for myself. However, I know I am not alone. This podcast quite literally has changed my life.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. So, just all the tears.
And then Allison, well, we know you're not alone, Chris, Kate, because Allison has the same things to say. And I can say the same thing. Lily can say the same thing. And like, what? How can a podcast change your life? But it's possible. And it's as you listen, you internalize what we talk about. You keep your heart open to hearing these stories and just letting your own story be different. And I don't know. Yeah. We can all benefit, I think, from having open hearts and letting this podcast change us for the better. So
solidarity and hope, I think, is what I think of when I think of my experiencing listening to our beautiful, amazing founders when I was in my postpartum season after C-section. So Women of Strength, we love to hear from you. These reviews touch our hearts. They bring us just so much joy and they help more Women of Strength find our podcast and be able to tune in for these life-changing conversations. So please leave us a review. You can do that on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We would love to read them and we would love to read them on the podcast. So share your thoughts. We would love to hear them. All right, my friends, we'll be back after this with Allison. Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same, to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider. Women of Strength, welcome back. We are here with Allison. I am just really super stoked to hear her story and for all of you to join us on this journey. So Allison, welcome. We're so excited to have you.
Yay. I'm so excited to be here. This is so amazing.
Awesome. So I'm going to read a little bit about you so that everyone can get a quick overview from your fun little bio that you sent to us. And then we'll hand the floor over to you. I feel super stoked to hear all the things. So Allison is a girl mom of two living in Charleston, South Carolina. After having a C-section for a breech baby in 2022, she knew immediately that she wanted to try for a VBAC with the next baby. Despite having a high-risk pregnancy and having to have a medically necessary induction at 37 weeks, Allison was able to welcome her VBAC baby in January of 2025. And Allison also works as a pelvic floor PT, working with pregnant people and postpartum moms that are preparing for and recovering from birth. So we're super excited to have you. The floor is yours, friend. Tell us all about the things.
Well, I just want to, kind of fangirl a little bit because you guys got me through a really hard pregnancy. It was funny, like when I got your email, like, you know, saying we want to have you on the podcast. I was like, oh my gosh. And my husband was like, what? He thought something like bad happened. And I was like, do you ever that podcast I used to listen to like every night when I cooked dinner and cleaned up, like what you were doing our older kiddos bath time? And he was like, yeah, I'm like, they want me to come on and talk about our birth story. And so, yeah, I mean, it just, it's really such an amazing, I mean, not to like go all over with this, but you guys provide such an amazing resource. And so I want to come in with kind of a perspective of personally kind of what I went through, but then also I work as a pelvic floor physical therapist and I have for about 7 years now. So primarily treating pregnant and postpartum mamas. I actually work inside of a birthing center. So yeah, which is like awesome. And I feel like my journey with figuring out what I wanted to do for birth started long before, you know, I was married, before we were ready to actually have a kid, all of those things, just from my experiences working inside of this all natural birth center. So, you know, just a little bit of background. I've been in Charleston, South Carolina for about 10 years now. I moved from upstate New York, so it's been a big change in climate, which is awesome. I started off as a kind of orthopedic sports medicine physical therapist working back in 2016. That was my first job here. So knees, backs, ankles, all the things, had like absolutely no interest in women's health and pelvic floor. I was like, no, you're gonna work with the athletes, all the things. And then back in 2019, I was asked to kind of cross train into more of like a pelvic floor, women's health. And I was like, I don't know if that's really going to be kind of the avenue I want to go down. I'm not sure if I'll like it. And they were like, well, let's just send you. And then if you end up not liking it, we can figure something else out. I was like, okay. So I went and just my mind was completely blown. Working in physical therapy, I feel like when I was in school, we didn't touch on it at all. How important the pelvic floor, how important this foundational piece of our body was. And I feel like it had completely blew my mind going to this training course. So I forged ahead and was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to focus on. Ended up working for this private practice physical therapy clinic inside of the birth center that I work at now. And so now all I'm seeing is pregnant moms, postpartum moms, other ladies with pelvic floor issues from age 18 all the way up to, I've seen 83. So really not, you know, never a time where you can't come in for pelvic floor, really. And I feel like that has just really driven my passion, especially around the pregnant postpartum community. And I feel like that's where I really started to kind of develop working with these moms that were having babies, that were, you know, giving birth at this birth center. I was like, I really want this unmedicated physiologic birth experience. And so that's kind of how I went into my first pregnancy with my oldest kiddo. Her name is Kaylee. So back in 2022, actually on April Fool's Day, we found out that we were pregnant with her. I know. I was like, actually not a joke. Like, you know, I thought it was kind of funny because that's when people, you know, go about that. And I was like, nope, we are expecting a little one. And it was very, very exciting. Definitely, I feel like, you know, that's, I was right away on it. Like, this is what I want to do. I want to have this physiologic birth experience. I hired my doula at like 10 weeks. I already hadn't, you know, I knew a lot of the doulas in the area. So I knew who I had already wanted to hire, which was awesome. So hired her right away. I chose to go with a local hospital. And one of the doctors that I had worked with there was more into the kind of unmedicated setup, was a little bit more flexible with what I wanted to do. My boss gave birth at the birth center 2 times, and which she had amazing experiences. I just was like, this feels too close to like, am I going to go into there in labor and be like, I'm going to work, and then things are going to like shut off? So it just felt like I wanted a little bit of space between professional and like personal boundaries, which, you know, probably would have been amazing. But I was with a local hospital kind of working through this pregnancy. And I had a really easy pregnancy with my first kiddo. I felt super lucky. Worst thing I had was just horrific heartburn, which once we got to our 36-week appointment, you know, I had only had the 2 ultrasounds earlier on, which was nice. But you got 20 weeks to 36 weeks and found out the reason I had horrific heartburn was because her head was jammed up into my stomach and she was just stuck in a Frank breech position. And I like had to sit up during that ultrasound because I started getting that vasovagal response where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to pass out. And not sure if it was because of, you know, just the thoughts that were reeling through my head, finding out she was breech. So went to work right away, trying to get her to flip around. I was hanging upside down off my couch probably way longer than I should have every day. I think I broke a ironing board trying to get in the breech tilt position. My husband was like, what are you doing? I burned a hole in our couch trying to do the moxibustion next to my toe. It's still there. We will replace it once our kids stop destroying our stuff. But there's still a hole in our couch from that herb. You know, I did chiropractic, acupuncture, all the things that you can do. And had had the conversation with my OB about the ECV or the external cephalic version, which is where they go and manually flip baby around. And really not something that I had wanted to do. But I felt like if I didn't try everything, I would have regrets looking back on it. So she had suggested 37 weeks. I just, in my gut, felt like I needed a little bit more time. I was like, maybe this baby will decide to go head down. You know, weird stuff happens all the time. And so, you know, we get to that 37 week working inside of a birth center. I had those poor midwives ultrasounding my belly every day I was at work. I was like, she had down yet? She had down yet? She had down yet? And I felt bad for them because they all had to be the bearer of bad news each time that, nope, she was firmly planted with her head up in my rib cage. So finally get to week 38 and we are getting to that ECV and we go in to the hospital. You know, they tell you, bring all your stuff just in case you have baby. It's a low percent. I think I looked it up, like it's 3 to 4% of moms have babies on that same day. It was kind of funny because it was right after Thanksgiving. My parents were actually here and I sent them home like the day before. I'm like, well, she won't come. And my mom still gives me a hard time because she was like on a flight a couple days later. But not to give the plot away here, but we went in for the ECV. My doctor was like sweating. She was trying so hard. They tried for about 15 minutes, a couple different tries. And just she wasn't budging. And they're like, you know, we're really sorry. We don't think we're going to be able to get her to move. We want to monitor you for a little bit. So, you know, go ahead and hang out. I hadn't gone to eat all day. So my husband went and grabbed us some Chick-fil-A, which I was like, oh God, I'm just really hungry. I just need to eat something. While he's gone, one of the nurses comes in and is like, hey, we're going to actually need you to hold off on eating a little bit. We're just monitoring some stuff. Just want to make sure. So I was like heartbroken. Like, oh my gosh, I just want my chicken nuggets right now, please. Depriving a pregnant woman of food. Just rough. But so, you know, he comes back with the food, you know, we're kind of asking how long. They're like, it could be a couple hours. We may want to watch you overnight. And I'm like, oh gosh, I don't like how this is going. Anyway, we end up about 10 o'clock at night. My OB comes in and she goes, hey, I think we want to have a birthday party today because my daughter's heart rate was doing some funky stuff. I guess my blood pressure had started to go up a little bit. And they felt like the best move was to do the C-section that night. So we went back. C-section was pretty standard. She was born at 11:48 at night on November 29th, 2022. And I had a hemorrhage during the birth. My doctor thinks that maybe during the ECV, the placenta got sheared. There was some bleeding from that, so it didn't detach cleanly. Not enough for a transfusion, but enough where I felt really yucky. And then, you know, just generally after a C-section, I'm not sure if it was worse because I had had the ECV as well, but next morning, like, I feel like I got hit by a car. So just, you know, first couple of days, really rough. We get home, mobility around the house, super tough. Even being a physical therapist, I know all the things to kind of help with that. Probably should have taken the abdominal binder with me knowing that, but I was just like, it's kind of hard when you're in it from a personal perspective to think about all the things professionally that you should be doing or that you would recommend for your patients to do. And looking back on that, I'm like, man, I wish I had like talked to myself from the professional standpoint to help with those early days of the C-section. So first week, we're kind of just getting through it. they wanted me to come back in at 1 week. I was actually already my 39-week appointment scheduled anyways. They're like, come back in, you know, your blood pressures were doing some weird stuff. Let's just have you come on in. And went in and I like, oh, okay, your blood pressure is really high. We're going to need you to go back to labor and delivery, get checked. Ended up getting diagnosed with postpartum preeclampsia, which again, kind of another rarer thing that happens. So that was another tough spot with the recovery after the first birth. So really the whole experience, kind of tough, you know, easy pregnancy, about 36 weeks on. Had a really tough time, you know, kind of recovering from that. And yeah, getting back with that.
That's so much. It's so big.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. And I mean, yeah, and you're caring for a newborn baby and trying to figure out nursing and what they need and, you know, what everything needs. And I just feel really blessed that her and I had such a beautiful, fairly easy nursing journey, because I was like, okay, nothing about birth went the way that I had hoped it would. So I was like dead set. I'm like, we are going to get this right so I can feel good about this, which, you know, it was hard, you know, being sleep deprived and all the things. And then the medication I was on for my blood pressure, I was on for about 5 weeks, those beta blockers, which just make you feel really yucky, really low energy. So I feel like, you know, the first few months recovering after her were just like super tough. And again, all the things I know to do from a professional standpoint, I feel like I was kind of chicken to do, like massaging my scar. And I don't think I like to use cupping a lot with my C-section mom patients, like around 10 to 12 weeks postpartum is kind of when we start. I couldn't work up the courage to do my own until I was closer to 6 months. And I was like, okay, like needed to do this. Because pretty much I remember my doula, which funny enough, she didn't even actually end up being at our daughter's birth, which kind of stunk because she would have been an amazing resource. And she offered to come and she was like, I'll come to the ECV. And I was like, oh, it'll be fine. We'll be home that night. Like I had like planned on putting something in the crock pot. And my husband was like, maybe don't, just in case, which thank God for him. But she came like 2 days after we got home from the hospital just to do a postpartum check-in, which is such a blessing. And she was like, listen to the VBAC link. We're going to switch to a different hospital that is VBAC supportive in Charleston. Like, she was already talking to me, and I'm like, girl, I am still bleeding over here. Like, but okay, I retained it all and was like, okay, this is like kind of where it first started, you know, after giving birth. Of like, I know we want another kiddo down the road. I know that I want to have a different birth experience. So that was kind of my first kiddo's birth. Love her dearly, but she definitely put mommy through it. And she still does as a very sassy 3-year-old.
Hi, Women of Strength. This is Lily. I wanted to personally chat about Needed's prenatal collagen. It was something I genuinely used during my VBAC pregnancy, and it became a non-negotiable part of my routine. What stood out immediately was how clean and simple it is. You're getting pure, hydrolyzed bovine collagen, nothing else, no fillers, no weird tastes, no chalky texture. It has neutral flavor that mixes perfectly into food or drinks, which honestly matters so much when you're pregnant. Collagen is especially important during pregnancy and postpartum because our body's natural collagen production actually starts to slow in our early 20s, and it's further impacted by stress, sun exposure, and just the overall demands of life. During pregnancy, birth, and recovery, your body is doing so much rebuilding. Collagen is rich in unique amino acids like glycine and proline, which are key building blocks that help support collagen production in the body and overall tissue support. For me, it felt like such a simple, intentional way to support my body through pregnancy, birth, and recovery. Needed continues to be a brand that I trust because they make supplements that truly support women through real life and real stages, and this was a big part of my journey. Get 20% off with code TVL. You can find the prenatal collagen and more at thisisneeded.com and type in code TVL at checkout for 20% off.
So kind of moving on into, she was about 15 months and I was still nursing her. So things were still kind of irregular and we weren't really trying, but ended up in March 2024 getting pregnant, which was kind of unexpected and exciting. We unfortunately suffered a early loss with that. So around 6 weeks, we did have a miscarriage with that pregnancy, which was super tough. But, you know, we kind of believe everything happens for a reason. And we were like, I think this is us, you know, kind of figuring out that we are ready to expand our family again. And we are ready to kind of move through as tough as it was and go ahead and kind of start trying for our next kiddo. So it always seems to happen on like really special days. But Mother's Day 2024, I was like, I should probably go take a test before I have another mimosa, like just in case, because, you know, you just like have that feeling. And it was funny because like my parents are visiting and like it was positive, which was so exciting. And I had to like kind of like my mom had poured me another mimosa and I'm like, here you go, honey, like just like kind of shoving it to my husband and like pretending like she didn't see it. But yeah, we found out we were pregnant on Mother's Day, which was like the best gift in the whole world, especially expecting our rainbow baby and all of those things. So we were, you know, doing all the HCG blood testing and all of that stuff just to track and make sure it was doubling this time around, which it was, which was awesome. I was still with my old OB office, which they do not do any VBACs at all. Not like, they won't even let you attempt if you go in on labor, like into labor on your own. They were like, so they partner with another OB group that will, but they go through the whole algorithm thing and you have to be like a 70% score with the algorithm or they won't even let you try, which yeah, my thoughts exactly.
Can we talk about that for a second? Like that VBAC calculator, crazy.
Yes, it's crazy.
Women of strength. No calculator could ever possibly ever account for the nuance that is birth, right? It like takes like a couple of things. And I think that OBGYNs, God love them, but they really like predictability, right? In the medical world, like they want a timeline, they want a statistic, they want a thing. And it was created as this, like, how do we predict VBAC? But we don't sit first time moms down and be like, okay, so tell me what I think your odds are of having this vaginal delivery. Like it just, I think I could be irked for 10,000 years about the calculator.
Yeah.
I even have a friend she's an OB resident right now. And I texted her, panic text, Paige knows this. I was like, I just need to know how she feels about the VBAC calculator, because if she likes it now, I'm not sure that we can be friends anymore. And I texted her and she was like, I think that it is like all about individual experience and it is not something that should guide like clinical decision making. And so I was like, okay, we can still be friends. I'm really glad that you said that. Thank you. Sorry about my random midnight text message that I was like, hey, so how you feel about that VBAC calculator? Yeah. So, okay. So you had the option to go to an OB group where they would give you a calculated risk.
Yeah.
And in the like same try hospital. To figure that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. So where did you go from here?
So my doula, again, she came to that 2-day at home from the hospital. You need to switch hospitals. And she had kind of told me this before too, because so not only would they not, so within the hospital, they had the two OB groups. The one would not do any VBACs. The other one made you get the epidural placed, which I know how y'all feel about that already. And I totally used this in my decision making. So thank you guys.
You know us very well.
Yes. Like I said, big time fan. So would make the epidural get placed. They wouldn't induce you and they would schedule you your C-section at 40 weeks. So if you didn't go into labor on your own, you were not going to have an attempt, a toe lock.
I want a flag that I can just wave when people are like, red flag. I just want like
I know. Multiple red flags.
And wave it like in the episodes.
Yeah. I should. Oh my gosh. Yes. And I've said this a lot to patients because now, especially having gone through the whole process, I am like, you need to switch providers. You need to switch hospitals. I'm so sorry. Like if you're not married to your doctor, like, and do not 100% need them to be the deliverer of your baby, this other hospital is VBAC supportive, not VBAC tolerant.
When your doula brought that up to you, how did you receive that? Did you feel like that was a little too out of her scope, or
no? Were you definitely
appreciative
not
of that.
I was yes, absolutely. Which it all kind of actually worked out. So the first doctor that delivered my older daughter, she actually left and went to a different hospital via hospitalist. So I was with a different OB that hadn't delivered a baby at this hospital, anyways. And so I switched to another hospital in the area. It's called MUSC. It's the Medical University of South Carolina. So they have like the top level NICU, like people come from all around the state to bring their babies to it. So that's definitely a big upside just in case anything goes awry. They were very VDAC supportive. So I had my confirmation ultrasound with my other practice at 8 weeks. And my doctor over there was even like, please let me know how it goes. Like, good luck. Like, totally like frustrated. She couldn't help me along the journey because of the hospital policy. But went over to this other provider, met with her at about 12 weeks pregnant. And she was like, yeah, we can go to 41 weeks as long as everything's looking good. We will induce you. You don't need an epidural. And I was like, oh, like this is, you know, kind of what I've been looking for. You know, granted, I was like, well, can I go past 41 weeks? Like that would, what does that look like? And she's like, we'll see how that goes when we get there. But really just very open, as long as medically me and baby were doing well, kind of just seeing how the cards unfolded here.
Yeah. And I think something to keep in mind too for listeners is that it's not that we necessarily want or need VBACs to be induced, mm-hmm. but if your provider is unwilling in a medical necessary induction to induce a VBAC, right. then that's when we skirt on a red flag, right? Like we hope that yes. the provider doesn't jump to an induction as like a standard, but that is great. Also, ACOG says in their guidelines, I'm like loving this. I'm like quoting it all the time now because in their VBAC guidelines, it specifically states that an epidural should not be considered necessary for VBAC. And so it is incredibly frustrating to me when OBs are like, well, you were required to get an epidural because even the American College of Gynecology and Obstetrics says not so.
Yes, exactly. Which is, I mean, again, utilizing all of y'all's helpful tips kind of throughout this whole process. So yeah, made the switch over. I feel like a lot of OBs don't want to have those birth conversations very early on, but I am type A. I am like a big planner. I am a pelvic floor physical therapist who helps women give birth. So I'm like at 16 weeks, like this is all the things I want for my birth. I hired my same doula again. I was like, hey, you are going through the trenches with me this time, girlfriend. Like, I need you there. Missed you last time, but we're going to make it happen. And yeah, my OB was like, okay, yeah. Well, you know, kind of just keep seeing how things are going. This was a rough pregnancy, not in symptoms, but I think I had a lot of unresolved trauma from my first birth, going through that pregnancy of like, everything's great. And then, you know, things just kind of went crazy. I was so neurotic about this baby not being breech. Like I was, you know, doing all the things, hanging upside down at, you know, probably 15 weeks. Like, which I mean, again, probably great. My uterus is very happy doing those four leading inversions anyways. Again, having the midwives at the birth center ultrasounding me like crazy. And at like 25 weeks, this little stinker, so we didn't know if we were having a boy or a girl, was breech at 25 weeks. And I like had a full on mental breakdown. And Lily, you actually pulled me out of the darkness because you posted that breech video like fairly recently. And I did all those things.
We would have been really close together. I'm like listening to your timeline. Yeah, I'm like, okay.
You gave birth, I think, pretty close to around where I did.
I was November of 24 with my VBAC.
I was watching your whole journey and I was like, if Lily does it, like, I feel like I'm going to be able to do this. And like, so really that video, like I did all those things and I think I had an ultrasound at my OB's office that Friday and then baby was head down.
Yeah.
And I like was so excited.
So that video, Women of Strength, is pinned to our Instagram. Yes. It's on our Reels segment. It's called How I Flipped My Breech Baby.
Yeah,
and it's long because it was alive.
Right. But it like the info is so good. I recommend it to all my patients. I actually just recommended it. One of the midwives that I work with is going through the same journey. She had a breech baby C-section. She's pregnant with her second. She is like, ugh, us poor breech mamas.
I'm
you're
gonna
so.
Cry.
Well, that's the thing, so you guys. Special. You guys are like so amazing and so helpful. And yeah, like this mama, you know, mama midwife going through it. She's 27 weeks. She just texted me today and she's like, what else can I be doing to make sure this baby is not breech? I was like, make sure you're doing all those stretches, girl. Make sure you're doing the mobility work, the balancing, all the things. I gave her some PT advice as well from that. which I feel like I look back on some of the stuff with my first kiddo and I'm like, I'm a PT. How did I not know this kiddo was breech? Which I think is hard to wrap my head around as well. But anyway, hopping ahead to my second kiddo's pregnancy. So I was being monitored closely, obviously, with the history of the preeclampsia postpartum. I had already kind of had, but definitely developed a pretty bad white coat syndrome as well, as you guys can probably imagine. I was taking my numbers at home. They were always like normal, elevated in the office. Eva brought my cuff in to kind of show them the comparison. And they're like, okay, you're fine. We checked my urine all the time. All the things were good. So really, you know, monitoring close, redoing NSTs pretty frequently, especially once I got into the third trimester, and just kind of making sure that like baby was growing well and all the things. So we get through the holidays and, you know, I'm starting to get anxious. I had worked with a therapist during pregnancy to help with some of the birth trauma stuff, which I wish I had dealt with sooner before getting pregnant. But I think it still kind of was present and kind of pushing some of these anxieties about like, I really want this feedback. I don't want anything to stand in the way of it. And, you know, some of that worry kind of going into some of my nervous system response of having that elevated blood pressure. So we skip ahead to day after New Year's. So January 2nd, I had my 37-week appointment. I think I was 37 and 2 when I went in. Had a first appointment of the day. Told my husband, I was like, I really need you to come here for this one. I had had my mom come into town early because my OB had kind of started having conversations about like, we're probably going to do 39 weeks just because you've got that gestational hypertension. And then she's like, we're hoping we can make it to 37 weeks. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, just, I don't know. I was a little bit worried about like, is this something that's kind of going on in the hospital system? Or is it just truly that we're having medical concerns? So had my mom come into town early so she could kind of hang out with my 3-year-old. And we went in for that appointment on January 2nd and blood pressure super high, probably slightly more elevated because I was like insanely anxious having a panic attack in the office, but still like my OB looks at me and she's like, I'm really sorry, but I have to send you to labor and delivery. And I was like, okay. I had kind of to that point, because we had had this conversation week after week, knew I was high risk, knew I was being closely monitored, had kind of started to mentally prepare myself that an induction was going to happen. And I had started, you know, the raspberry leaf tea, the dates, the primrose oil, all of that stuff. I had started around 35 weeks, which I'm very thankful for, because I feel like she checked me and she was like, you're like half a centimeter dilated. And I was like, yes, we can do the balloon. Perfect. Knowing just kind of what I know from there. So we left there, came home to get our stuff, said goodbye to my 3-year-old, which like ripped my heart out. It's like the hardest thing in the whole world. Saying goodbye to your older kiddo, knowing it's never the same again. But we went to the hospital January 2nd. We got there at about 11:30 in the morning. Now, this is a teaching hospital, which can be a good thing. They have kind of more hands on deck. So I feel like they have more people to help with stuff. They have more of the kind of residents that need VBACs under their belt to kind of move on. They need more unmedicated births. So like they're kind of helping moms along in a little bit different way than in a hospital that I feel like is not a teaching hospital. Now that being said, yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think that's a beautiful perspective because I think a lot of people, at least in my area, like our teaching hospitals, like, ugh, don't go there because like you'll get stuck with a resident, which totally can be the case. But also, you might get stuck with someone stuck with like awesome openness and perspective and a willingness to be innovative or this like extra care. So I loved that you mentioned that because I think that that is important to also have that mindset too.
100%. Yeah. And I feel like I had talked with my doula about this and I talked with some of my patients about this too, about how they said, yeah, like I had this resident that was like, let's try this maneuver or whatnot when they're going and doing birth. So I feel like that can be really helpful with a teaching hospital. Now, the not so helpful part was when I got there, it took them about an hour to get my vein, my IV in, which was rough. I'm not a hard stick. Like I've never had issues getting IVs before. It was just this poor nursing student. You know, she's fine. But yeah, took about an hour to get my IV in. They were starting the They're going to start the magnesium, which gosh, for anyone that's had magnesium before, it is really rough. I understand why they have to do it, but I would not wish that on anybody. Basically makes you feel like you are insanely hungover and just your skin is like on fire. That's kind of the best way I can describe it. So we got that started. They gave me the blood pressure medication to bring it down. Again, this poor nursing student, they had me take a pill and then she gave me a bolus through the IV and my blood pressure went the other way. So it tanked. And then they're like, okay, let's give you fluid. So it took, we got there, you know, kind of early on, took several hours to kind of get that all leveled out. Then the resident came in, talked with me. She was like, we're going to start your induction this afternoon. I want you to go ahead and get some food, which I was very thankful for. Had my meal, you know, really tried to up the carbs, protein, all the things, make sure I got well-rounded. And then they started my induction around 4 p.m. on January 2nd. So had talked to the game plan with my doula, had her kind of on, you know, we talked on the phone and she's like, these are all the things we're going to do. The way that I loved that she worded it was like, we only have so many different things we can do for an induction. We lose one of those options with it being a VBAC induction, which is the cervical softener. So we can't throw everything all at once or we're going to run out of options. So we got to kind of start slow and see how your body responds. And I thought that was a really helpful way to look at it. So our game plan is we were going to start with the Foley catheter balloon and then kind of pair that with some nipple stimulation. I had brought my portable pump. They had the in-hospital pump. We were just going to kind of get some of those going. They're preparing for all of this. And I'm sitting in that bed with my husband sitting next to me. And I'm feeling this like just overwhelm and this like magnesium state that I'm in. And I'm just like, just give me a C-section. I can't do this. And I will always remember him looking at me being like, stop, you're going to do this. You're still going to get your vaginal birth. Like, we're all going to be fine. I was like, okay, need you to like really pull me through this because I'm having a hard time right now. So we get the Foley balloon in. Again, I was half a centimeter. This was not easy for them to do or comfortable for me. But they get it in and we're kind of pairing this with some on and off nipple stimulation. I think I did a couple hours of this. One of the other residents comes in and checks. And poor girl, I like wanted to kick her, but she pulled it out. It's like, you're only 2 centimeters. We're going to have to put another one in. And I was like, are you kidding me? What? So that was not ideal.
Is there a reason she pulled it out before it?
I have no idea. I think sometimes I was trying to talk about this with some of the midwives at work after this all happened. And they're like, sometimes they think they have to take it out to do the cervical check. And I'm like, okay, but if you inflate it so much, like, why don't we just like let it come out on its own? And then you know exactly how. I mean, I'm definitely not a big fan of many cervical checks, like for others and myself, but I could understand why they're necessary at times. However, like, I really wish you had just left that in there. So anyway, they're like, we're going to have to do another one. And I was like, oh God, like just preparing for it. Thankfully, easier to get in the second time because I was more dilated. My body did not love that. I got sick each time that they put that Foley balloon in there. But it was, you know, doing its thing, still pairing it with the nipple stimulation. Later on in that evening, they were like, let's go ahead, let's kind of start some of the Pitocin. Talked it over with my doula, Cindy. Again, she was everything. And she goes, yeah, have them start like low and slow. Let's kind of just see how things start going. Had the Pitocin with the Foley throughout the night. I was like very crampy. I think that's like the biggest difference with the balloon versus like kind of regular contractions is it felt like there was no break. It was just constant cramping. So I'm kind of moving around, having my husband do massage gun like on my back, on my hips, and still having this in. Talking with my doula, had her come in around 4 a.m, I think is when she joined us because I was like, okay, I feel like I kind of need you to be here in person to help guide me through things. I feel like things are maybe starting to progress a little bit. And shortly after she got there, so she got there about 4 a.m, I want to say it was just a couple hours later, the nurse came in to check because with the Foley catheter, they kind of like keep putting tension on it and then they take it to the inside of your leg. It's real cute, but they kind of just keep that tension. It does the job though. And, you know, she gave a little tug and it came right out. And so we were at 5 centimeters, which was really exciting. And so we're like, okay, my doula's here. We're making progress. She kind of same thing was like pulling me out of this like very hard mental state that I was in of like, oh my gosh, this is a long journey, but we're going to get there. And so, you know, I'm still without an epidural at this point. This hospital does offer nitrous oxide, which is a cool option to have as well. And something that I had talked with them about, signed all the forms, all of that stuff. I hadn't, you know, with my first birth, I was like, I had wanted this like really unmedicated physiologic experience. With the second one, I was like, I just want to be back. Like, however I get there, I'm cool with it. But what I tell my patients a lot and what my doula and I had talked about is there is a big difference between tolerating and suffering. And I was like, at this point, I am still tolerating contractions. I am still moving through everything. So I think I'm just going to ride it out until I can't. Because just as a PT, I know that movement is so helpful for labor. And I mean, obviously you guys as doulas, we love kind of movement in those labor, or especially early laborers. We're getting things going just to kind of keep baby moving onto that cervix. So yeah, we get to a 5, then I'm walking the halls. That's when we transition to the dilation station, also known as the toilet. And I spent extensive time here. And so it's kind of funny. My husband, I mean, I think he was like, I'm not quite sure what to do, because like Cindy had all the things. And I was like, you just hang out over there, because once this baby comes out, you will have a lot to do. So he was like really missing our older daughter. And they happened to have a playground on the top floor of this hospital, because it's also a children's hospital. So he had my mom bring her in and they went up to the playground, which was great. But, you know, it's January 3rd at this point. So it was cold up there, but I'm on the toilet, kind of going through the moves, going through kind of the like abdominal lift and push in with my doula, which amazing. Like, and I, at that point, I think they had broken my water shortly before. No, we had not broken my water yet, but I was on the toilet and pushed me into active labor, which was like really cool. I was like, okay, feeling all the things. And that was really my big goal with this birth was, yes, to have a VBAC, but I'm like, I just want to experience labor and just kind of go through what my body, I feel like, was kind of built to do. And I was so excited to be able to be experiencing this. So we're in this. They're kind of starting to talk about like breaking my water and we want to get my husband back down. However, I am now kind of into the active labor unmedicated part of things where like I'm getting a little bit less happy and my, like, I don't know that I can show face for my 2-year-old at the time. So my doula texts my husband's like, hey, things have changed. We kind of need you to come back. Maybe don't bring Kaylee, my daughter, into the room with you. Like a typical man, he doesn't check his phone. And I am like, mid contraction, kind of like groaning, and like my poor 2-year-old comes into the room and I'm like, I'm so sorry if this was like too much for you, honey. But anyway, we kind of move forward from there, send my mom and my daughter home. And at that point, they broke my water. I think it was between a 6 and a 7, they said at that point. So making progress, which was great. Continuing to move around. And I hit about 5 or 6 p.m. that night. And this is about 25 hours since we started the process. I hadn't had food. I hadn't slept. I'm starting to kind of hit the wall and I can feel myself with contractions. Like I am not relaxing the way that I want to be. I'm not able to breathe through it. And of course, this all unfortunately hit at the same time that my doula went on break. So my husband's there trying to help me. And I'm like, no, you're not doing this right. I just like, I need a minute. This is hard. But I kind of was thinking through. I'm like, I need to rest. I need to be able to relax. I need to let my pelvic floor relax or we're not going to make progress. I also need to be able to have energy to push this baby out once we get there. And so I made the decision. I was like, I want to get the epidural. And I am like very okay with this. Again, my goal was like be back however we get there. And so that's when I asked for an anesthesiologist to come in and kind of get that when they were ready. So got the epidural. I think by the time they got there, got it in, it was around 7 p.m. on January 3rd. Was able to get in a good, I think my doula came back in, Cindy came back in. So she got me in that nice like extended sideline position. She's like, you can just hang here and we'll sleep. I was like, cool. Got a little bit of sleep, kind of in and out. I woke up because I was having some kind of breakthrough contractions in my left lower quadrant of my abdomen. And I was like, couldn't feel anything, but could feel it right here. And my epidural was perfect. Things were kind of dulled. I could still move my legs a little bit. Like, it was ideal. I'm like, that's what you want if you're kind of getting that epidural placed. But I could still feel this little spot. And I'm kind of moving around. I'm wiggling around. And my doula is kind of looking at me. And she's like, you look like you're unsettled. Like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know. I just feel like kind of like, like nauseous almost. And like all of a sudden I started feeling this like heaviness like in my pelvis. Like I was like, there's something there. And like knowing what I know and knowing like, oh my gosh, this is probably baby. Like I was like, I think I like feel something. And so the doctor's like, yeah, you know, it's only been a couple hours. Like we'll check. And so she went and checked and she goes, oh, okay, baby's head is like right there. You are complete. You're ready to push. And like, I think I just like burst out in tears because that's like, it had been like, you know, this is at 9 p.m. the next day. So we were at like 29 and a half hours or something crazy like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, just the best news that they ever could have given me. So they're kind of prepping for us to go ahead and start pushing. And I am starting to get the urge to push, which is awesome. Definitely as a pelvic floor PT that does a lot of birth education, I'm always like, wait for the urge, wait for baby to get to that lower position or lower station so that we are not pushing unnecessarily. So getting set up, I told them, I said, I really want to give birth laying on my side. They're like, cool, sounds good. I'm like, okay, awesome, love this. So roll onto my left side. And I'm pushing beautifully. I think I had Morgan Wallen playing. Like, it was just like such a vibe. It was Friday night. It was like, okay, this baby's coming out. We're going to be through this. And pushing was going really, really well. I was pushing kind of the way that I like coach people to push. They were saying I was doing such a great job. I'm going for more of that like open glottis pushing versus purple pushing, coached pushing. And I was like, oh, yes, the pelvic floor PT in me was so excited. And then the doctor. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Can you coach us through what do you tell your patients? What is open glottis pushing versus that like purple pushing? How can we, I would love to hear too. Like I coach patients all the time, but I would love to hear your perspective. What is the language that you use to really like get people to wrap their minds around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, I kind of have them put their hands on the bottom of their belly. And I say, you want to take a big inhale into the bottom of your belly. And you want to hold, And you want to hold that expansion. And then you want to open mouth and you want to sigh out further, kind of pushing into that expansion. So we're breathing in and breathing out that expansion. Almost thinking about kind of like pushing out a tampon, or a lot of the ladies that use like menstrual discs, menstrual cups, they have a little bit better practice with that. And when in clinic, I will typically have my finger internally just to kind of give them that digital feedback, which a lot of people find very helpful because when I have moms come in for pushing practice, 9 out of 10 times they're Kegeling when they go to push. And I'm like, ugh, no, not what we want to be doing when baby is trying to come out. But yeah, that's kind of the same breathing technique I was using versus the closed glottis or the purple pushing is you take that big breath in and then you're going to hold and bear down. So all that pressure goes into your pelvic floor.
Do you recommend like a Kegel with the inhale or just like a loosen with the inhale and then more of the expansion?
Yes, second. So with the pushing, we don't really want any of that Kegeling to be happening. I always tell them, I'm like, I'd rather your pelvic floor do nothing than Kegel. I want us to just kind of stay in that like rested or lengthened position. So it kind of, you know, talking about it, we have that lengthened and then we have that lengthened plus, which is going to be kind of during that push. So really having people, yeah, during, I love it too. It's so great. I'm just like, oh, we're taking back the birth experience for moms, which is so amazing.
Did you find that your OB at all was like coaching you the opposite of that?
No, anyway, thank goodness.
Yeah. I find that I coach my clients to breathe, and oftentimes OBs come in and like skirt around. They're like, oh, well, that's, you're not actually not effectively pushing if you're breathing, exhaling during that. And yeah. I have seen a couple of clients who like don't exhale long enough, so they're not getting like a sustained push.
Right.
But this is why Women of Strength at Pelvic Floor PT is so awesome when you're pregnant, because you can do exactly what Allison is saying. It's like practicing with someone that can give you feedback, and it's not just like in the moment where things are really intense and your OB is telling you one thing and your doula is telling you one thing. Like, pick a source of truth and go with it.
And it's hard. And I do feel like that internal feedback is so helpful for people too, because I think a lot of women are not really connected in that area of their body, especially during pregnancy, because there's so many changes, so many hormones that are kind of counteracting in that area. And yeah, I mean, there's so much, you know, discrepancy between like what is being told by your OB. And, you know, what I like to tell people is like, push this way unless they give you a medical reason why you have to push the other way. You know, sometimes that happens where we have to get baby out really quickly. That's what I said. I'm like, it's not a race. We don't need to get baby out in 5 minutes, but we also don't want to be pushing for 4 hours. So like, we want to land somewhere in between there, like in a good spot. And I really have seen with my patients that come back, that see me during pregnancy, come back postpartum, they're like, oh my gosh, I started pushing. And the nurse was like, wait, I got to get the doctor. No more practice pushes for you. And I'm like, that is my hope for moms going in, that they have that easier time. They have those shorter pushing times, less tearing, kind of all of those things. With mine, I unfortunately had the situation where I did have to push the way to get her out quickly, because little miss, after, you know, about 30 hours with all of this, started having heart decels. And I heard the doctor say that, and again, knew in my head, that was like, I did not go through all of this just to end up back in the OR. Like, we are not doing this. And I looked at my husband and I said, she's coming out on this next slide. And it was a girl, but I said, baby's coming out on this next push. And like, he said that like the doctors, I shot her out and they were like trying to catch her. Cause I was like, I just want this baby out. And while she came out and I got my V back, I did sustain a third degree tear, which is not ideal. It was a 3A, so it's the least severe of them, but definitely not an ideal situation. However, she came out, you know, we figured out it was a girl, which was super exciting. My husband was supposed to be the one to like announce it to everybody, but I think he was so like, what the heck just happened, that I was like, I'm not waiting for you. And like, look, I was like, it's a girl. And I got that moment of like getting to pull her like up to my chest and have them clean her on me. And like all those things that I had so wished for with my first birth, with my C-section. And that was just, even with kind of the difficult birth, that was such a healing experience of being able to kind of have that happen. And so here we are 13 months later. I know she just turned one January 3rd. So it has been a crazy, crazy experience, both of my births, really.
Yeah. Wow. So with your third degree tear, what did postpartum recovery look like? Can you share a little bit more about that?
So postpartum recovery, both recoveries were hard in kind of unique ways. Definitely with that abdominal scar with the C-section, I also had a lot of bowel trouble after that as well, which very, very hard to kind of get through that, plus having that healing scar. I also feel like with my first, I did not rest enough. I was like bending over and trying to load the dishwasher like the third day we were home. Again, my mom was here helping. I'm like, what am I doing? So I feel like just those first 2 weeks post C-section were really hard mobility, really hard just having pain, discomfort, again, having some bowel difficulties. With the healing from the third degree tear, I feel like some of the biggest differences were, I feel like I didn't have those same bowel difficulties, which was awesome. Definitely had some like urinary concerns that I didn't have the first time around. You know, I feel like post-birth things are kind of all over the place anyways. Had a ton of just like pelvic pressure, discomfort, kind of felt like things were not being supported the right way. So I couldn't stand for a long period. It's not that you really should in those early weeks. Anyways, I do feel like I allowed people to do more the second time around and kind of just like sat on my butt a little bit more. So I feel like even though, again, the first week, challenging, healing was tough, I feel like by week, you know, the end of week two, I really felt a little bit more like myself. Took my time lifting my two-year-old at the time. So I was really focused on just me and my little one, her name is Claire. So kind of just focused on my care, baby's care, sitting down, resting. I continued the raspberry leaf tea as well, which game changer. Still use it for menstrual discomfort, and it is like the best thing in the whole world. So that really helped. I think I only had like a week and a half of bleeding, which was awesome. Yeah. No, seriously, like sidebar, for any period help, raspberry leaf tea. I swear to God, I like have not had to take Tylenol at all since I started using it postpartum with this kiddo. Anyway, looking at kind of longer term healing with the third degree tear. So just like with a C-section scar, any perineal scars, we want to be doing scar massage too. We want to be doing stretching to desensitization. Those nerves are going to be a little bit kind of hyped up. So again, like with the C-section, it did take me a little bit longer than I probably would have advised a patient to do, but really kind of started working on that probably about 3-4 months in. Definitely, you know, helpful with kind of return to intimacy, with bowel habits, with, you know, as I returned to kind of my strength training, all of that stuff. But really with those higher degree tears, it is crucial to be getting in and doing some scar work, some scar massage there. Very similar to the perineal stretching that we hopefully are doing during pregnancy as well. But really, I do feel like overall my recovery with the second birth was totally different experience. I feel like I was like getting back into feeling more like my normal self sooner. I think some of that may be kind of the hormonal shift back that happens in the vaginal birth versus the C-section. Also like second baby, like you're kind of like, okay, done this before, kind of figured it all out. Also dove headfirst into sourdough. I feel like that is like a cure for postpartum anxiety for me. I like was scrolling sourdough influencers at 2 a.m. versus like all the crazy things you can find on Instagram that make you fear things as a mom. But really, I was very grateful with, you know, even having that more severe tear, that my recovery was really good overall. And I do think that has to do with letting my body rest in the beginning, initiating some of those, you know, stretches, scar massage, that sort of thing, and just kind of really being mindful of what my body needed in that moment.
Amazing. Sorry, this was like a weird delay. I didn't know. No, you're good. Just like, hello. Oh, so good. I think it's so helpful to like see your perspective and just humanizing too, right? Like even but as a PT yourself was like, mm-hmm. I probably could have gone in sooner. And so, you know, it's never too late to pursue that healing and
right.
to go see a pelvic floor PT. I didn't go in. I was probably like 6 months postpartum after my VBAC and had gone back to teaching fitness way too early. And I knew like I had been to PT. I love my PT. She's amazing. Shout out to Liesl. And I like went in and was like, hey, so I still like pee my pants when I'm like teaching spin classes. And she was like, hey, buddy, like we could have fixed this sooner. What are you doing?
It's hard. It's so hard to prioritize yourself as a mom too. And I mean, you know, again, really, it's never too late like for any of that stuff. I think getting in whenever you can is obviously ideally I like to see people, you know, 6 weeks, you know, sometimes we see people sooner, like a lot of post-C-section moms, I'll see them at 4 weeks. So you can kind of start some stuff with their scar and whatnot. But I mean, I think anytime you can get in and get work done and kind of, you know, make improvements in those symptoms. Again, I've had women come in their 60s that are 30 years past having kids and make really good improvements. So obviously, big advocate for pelvic floor physical therapy. Again, you know, it is kind of interesting that I feel like I have all this insight and experiences. And I tell my patients, I'm like, listen, my births were like all over the place. They were not at all what I would have pictured or, you know, thought that things would go. But really, you kind of just have to help your body recover from what needed to happen in that moment.
Yeah,
Yeah, so you had a lot of curveballs, that's for sure, both with your first and with your second.
Yes.
So it's,
yes.
I'm so impressed by the way that you pivoted, by the way that you persisted, and just are soaking it all in, learning all the things from you. So thank you so much for sharing it all.
Absolutely.
Congratulations. Like,
thank you.
You overcame so much through the magnesium and the induction and just the way that you made such thoughtful decisions and had your doula with you. And then when your doula wasn't there, the way that you're like, no, I know that I'm ready for this epidural. And it was what your body needed to progress. And then your doula came back and helped you. And, you know, like all the little pieces, there's so much that we can take from. So thank you. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. And I thank you guys so much again. Like, I kind of knowing that it was like impending that I was probably going to be induced earlier, I feel like I targeted all those episodes on the podcast of moms that had gone through that experience. And that's what kind of motivated me to like reach out and share my story. So I'm like, I know there's other moms going through this that are facing an early induction, a medical induction, you know, preeclampsia, which is like a whole scary thing in itself. And again, like, huge shout out to MUSC for really being really flexible with, you know, my wants and needs through the whole process, because I know there's a lot of times where I feel like moms go in and it's like, nope, we're just going to go, you know, right to this. We're not going to try all these different things. And, you know, again, as long as everybody is medically doing okay, I feel like you should be able to have a big say in your birth experience. And yeah, I mean, I could not have done it. I told her this like a million times. My doula, Cindy, if you're in the Charleston area, like, she is just incredible. I was like, if there is a number three, I don't know about that. I was like, but you know, I'll be reaching back out to you. But that is a big if, because these two kiddos have definitely put me through the ringer in and out of the room, out of the womb. So we are, yeah. But I, again, can't thank you guys enough for all that you do and all the resources you provide. And I, you know, work with a lot of moms now that are seeking VBACs. I mean, moms that I may be soldering their first that had a C-section for whatever reason. And then, yeah, I'm always like, you guys got to go listen to this podcast. It's really motivational. But again, I feel like it's so empowering to be able to take the reins a little bit and be able to have that outcome, even though it's not perfect, but have that outcome that you're hoping for.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of the Charleston area, if Women of Strength are listening and they're in search of a pelvic floor PT, where can they find you?
So I am working with a company called Rome Physical Therapy. So we are a small private practice, pelvic floor physical therapy only. My office is inside of the Charleston Birthplace. We also have locations for those locals. So we are in Mount Pleasant. And then we also have a location in Somerville and West Ashley. So our owner is big on making sure all the mamas know all their birth options. So we do love doing birth education. Again, I have definitely a passion now, especially for the VBACs or even like the planned C-section mamas that are going through it. Really, really any birth. But yeah, Rome Physical Therapy, Rome, is where you guys can find us.
Okay. I have a doula who I work with at the birth center I go to and work at here as a doula in South Korea. She's moving to South Carolina next month.
Yeah. So oh my God. Yep,
her name is Karen, and she's worried about moving back to America. She's like,
oh my gosh,
done doula work here, and I love this birth center so much, and I'm scared about birth in America from the stories I've heard. So I will send her your way.
Tell me. Yes, please do. Yes, please do. And I mean, I'm sure like my doula, there's a whole professional doulas league where there's, I think, 8 or 10 of them in that. But I'm sure they would love to connect and all the things. Yeah.
Oh, Allison, thank you again. You're incredible.
Thank you, guys. Oh, thank you. You guys are awesome. Mm-hmm. Really, really, please don't ever stop doing what you're doing, because it's so needed. And it helped me get through some really tough times. And so I can't thank you enough.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
This episode featured ads for Needed. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.